Hello, hello, and welcome to Reality TV. I know we're far apart in distance, but we're all close in each other's minds and hearts and TV. I mean, you could look at it this way. It's 2 weeks down, question mark weeks to come, but we're 2 weeks down. All right, that's the good news. The other good news is that I'll be breaking down 90 Day Fiancé, Sister Wives, and the latest two episodes of 60 Days In. It's not too late to jump in. Truly is the best show that's on TV. That means my newest Patreon subscribers, Liz, Sophia, Janice, Melissa, and Fahima, along with all the other baddest apples, you are going to be getting full recaps of Married at First Sight, holy shit, how much do we hate Zach, and Love After Lockup over on Patreon. If you are a subscriber to Total Request Podcast, you're going to be loving this week because we're doing two episodes. The first one is Celebrity Big Brother UK, the one with Farrah Abraham. God, I can't wait for that. And we're also going to do a full bonus episode. It's a show that Amanda chose, and you'll just have to wait and see what that is. Everyone can be watching a little show that I found this past weekend. I didn't even know this sport existed. It's stone skipping. Yeah, you know, like you pick up a rock and you chuck it across water. There was a stone skipping competition. I think it took place in, oh gosh, I'm forgetting, somewhere in Michigan. And two of the guys competing, their names were Nutty McNutter. This is not a joke. And there was another guy named Bugsy. I want to say it's like Bugsy Tops. You need to watch this thing. They all wear like these big bucket caps. They take it very seriously. They make a lot of really bad dad jokes like, he's a stone-cold competitor. It's pretty damn good, dare I say, better than some of the crazy bowling competitions that I've seen. Although I feel like bowling might take more skill. Please don't go after me in my iTunes reviews. I've had the beehive. Someone just ripped me a new one saying that I swear too much. Now I'm going to have the stone-skipping coalition after me. But if that is still not your thing, I'm going to give you an old school throwback. I don't even know if they make these books anymore, but I spent way too long, too many hours to even admit to you, looking up magic eye images. If you remember these things, they were from the 90s and they were super popular. You could get posters, books, and the page itself or the poster itself looked like almost like when you do a color test on your printer to see if your cartridges are still good. It's just crazy looking on the page. But if you cross your eyes, you can make it go 3D. I freaking loved them. And not to brag, I'm really good at getting my eyes to go wonky. I wasn't very good at anything else. I was never good at instruments or sports or anything like that, but I could fucking rock out magic eye posters. So I was telling my kids about it and I was like, oh my God, we got to look these things up. So of course I Google it and I spent hours smoking their asses because they cannot see even the easy ones. That's like, here's a giraffe. So yeah, go back onto Google, search magic eye images, rub it into your kids that you can do something better that they can't, like use your eyeballs. You know, your kids might be able to build an entire village on Roblox and Fortnite, but you know, you can cross your eyes. So there. All right, well, you're going to roll your eyes quite a bit because I'm going to jump right into 90 Day Fiancé, starting with Yolanda. Ooh, Yolanda. Not so much anymore. She's just a big dum-dum. She's going to believe that this Williams guy might be legit, and she thinks that we are dumb enough to believe whatever story she's trying to sell us. If you remember when I talked about Yolanda, I think it was actually 2 weeks ago because I don't think she was on last week, frauded by TLC on Instagram. I think she did an interview with the supposed Williams. It's all very confusing, but at the end of the day, Yolanda is trying to pull the story over that she was catfished, and that's not the case. What I am most upset about Yolanda for, and what she's most guilty of, is shopping at a store called Hottie. She says she goes to her favorite store, Hottie, when she wants to look fresh and cute. Eh, wrong. All wrong, Yolanda. Listen to me. Get yourself to an Old Navy. Get yourself to Target and hit up that clearance rack. You will look fresh and cute for probably less than what you're spending on those horrible sequence dresses. I'll even say Kohl's. Get yourself to Kohl's. Actually, that might be better because, you know, I'm still pissed at Target for insisting on selling us only the top half of shirts lately. Okay, so let's move on to Stephanie and Erica, another snoozer couple. I'm saving all the good ones for last. I don't know if you knew this, but Stephanie has something called aplastic anemia. Just making sure you didn't miss it the first 18 times. So while Stephanie is making sure to show us all the things she's got to do to stay alive for filming her YouTube channel, Erica is taking photos of kangaroos because she's a kooky, colorful photographer. The strangest thing about Erica, in my opinion, is that she is besties with Tyler from Teen Mom. Apparently, while Caitlyn was chewing her fingies down to the nub, Tyler's grown out a side mullet and gone down under because holy hell, we have found Tyler's doppelganger if that is not him. I could not look away. Go and look in the Facebook group or on Twitter or Instagram. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. I've never seen anyone look as identical to Tyler, even his own kids who look exactly like him. But let's talk about Erica a little bit because this is the first time we're meeting her. She is bisexual, but guess what? Her parents don't know either, just like Stephanie's. Surprise! If I were Erica's mother, I would be disappointed in her choice to use a non-insulated tumbler in the middle of the fucking outback, not her sexuality. But finally, Stephanie arrives in Australia, and I'm not quite sure what the protocol is for using her mask and when she doesn't, and also the sanitizer, because it's pretty damn loosey-goosey to me. She doesn't wear the mask on the plane or in the terminal, but then she puts it on to go down the escalator just to take it off again to stare at Erica. It makes no sense to me. And when she sat down on that bench with her bare legs, I gagged. I could very easily put Stephanie's mom's mind at ease if she were to spend an average day with me, even before all this corona shit. And trust me, she would come in contact with far less than the billion germs that she's got to average daily, because that made no sense. If you're going to sit down basically with your bare ass because that skirt was so short, well, you might as well just douche with toilet water from the airplane, because then you're going to wipe and your ass has been on the thing. I mean, it's a whole cross-contamination process that we're all way too familiar with at this point. Why is she doing what she's doing? Is it for attention? I hate to say that because obviously she's got this disease, but it just does not make any sense. But finally, she makes her way down this little escalator. And despite them saying that they were so attracted to each other and it felt so natural, I didn't feel or see any real sparks. I mean, sure, every couple that's on the show, there's going to be some extent of awkwardness, but these two were particularly awkward. I don't know if it was like both of them were waiting for the other to make the move and, I don't know, be the alpha or whatever, the aggressor, but it didn't seem like it was a natural flow to me, but I guess we'll see in the coming weeks. Okay, Avery and Ash. Oh my God, Ash annoys the shit out of me, but I thoroughly enjoyed every second of their segments this week. Now, this may come as a surprise because, you know, Avery and Ash clearly belong to the same church as the Duggars, but these two did the thing, you know, the devil's dance twice. Yeah. Well, how do we know this? It's because Ash, in his thick nipple, it's the only way I can think of to describe it. It was just a thick nipple, and this pubic arm hair were just splayed all over the bed in all their splendor. Meanwhile, Avery's neck was in a full-out rash, probably because he uses some sort of eucalyptus oil and sea salt on his armpits or something, but she had a huge red rash on her neck. Anyway, they're laying there and they're trying to be all coy, like, we did this thing and had this connection. And then Ash started getting really smug and cocky about it, which makes me believe that he does not get laid as often as he wants us to believe. When he said, yeah, you did, after Avery made this little joke, like, I like it a lot, that really pissed me off. I don't know why, I'm probably projecting something here, but Mr. Relationship Expert should have said, yeah, me too, I did really like it a lot. Not just lay there like you did her a favor, stupid, overshaved, big-eyed land lizard. Aren't all lizards land lizards? Okay, anyway, that's what I'm sticking with. There's somewhere there's a Beanie Baby that is a land lizard that's got big eyes and it looks like Ash. I just know it to be true. All right, but the worst was yet to come, because even if Avery was not offended by him saying, yeah, you liked it last night, I would have thought she would have picked up on this, but she didn't. They walk into the kitchen and Ash whips out celery. Celery for breakfast. I mean, maybe that's all he can eat because he's got to fit into his way too tight skinny jeans. But to me, that's a deal breaker. Walk out and never look back again, Avery. Go have an amazing Australian vacation. Get the hell out of there. An exhaustive night of lovemaking and this guy slams down celery to eat? Hell no. That's the kind of life you want to live, Avery? Nope. I don't see it happening. But alas, later, Avery is supposed to meet and, for some reason, kiss up to Ash's brother, Antish. Is that how you say it? Antish. I don't get why she's so nervous about it. I get she wants to make a good first impression, but does this guy hold Ash's purse strings? Does he hold his hairy balls or probably hairless? Because I could see Ash like using nads. Remember nads? I think that was an Australian thing, wasn't it? Nads wax. You could actually eat it. There was a whole infomercial. All right. Wow. That might be a whole other Patreon episode. Anyway, I don't understand why we are holding this stranger to Avery, Antish, to this Bikram-esque level, if you will. But I kind of understood it as soon as Antish walked in because he was kind of hot. I mean, he's a judgy asshole, but he was hot, or at least hotter than Ash. Think about it this way. Ash is what happens if you were to squeeze Antish too hard. Now, like I said, Antish was being harsh, but I don't think he was wrong. There are major issues that Ash and Avery have that they have not worked through. Both of them have kids. Both of them have exes. There's, you know, a big ocean in between them. No big deal. I'm sure Ash has a solution for it, considering he's a relationship expert. Oh, and at the very end, Antish said something like, Ash never listens to advice. He does what he wants no matter what anyone says, which is pretty interesting considering Ash is a relationship expert who gives other people advice, so he can quite literally dish it out, but he can't take it. Great quality to have. All right, now let's talk about David and Lana. God, David is checking a lot of Michael, Gary, Scott boxes for me. He's creepier, of course, because no one can be as pure of a gem that Michael Scott is, but David's pretty damn close. Did you see the unused Bowflex in his townhouse that he bought to fill with children and have ketchup fights in? He had the stack of shirts that he was packing made by Mysterious, not to mention the massage oil, because, you know, he's an expert. Oh, God, that was rough. But of course, he's also planned some activities for he and Lana. Nothing crazy and sexual. Get your mind out of the gutter. Oh, David. He's either a serial killer, like I postulated last week, or he's world's best boss. There's no gray area in between there. Now, although Michael Scott bought a ring that was 2 years' salary, not our David. He put down, what, $200 maybe on a cubic zirconia, but it's sparkly. It definitely sparkles. Darcy would have taken it, that's for damn sure. But let's fast forward to the Odessa airport, and we meet Anya, world's best friend. You see, Lana isn't at the airport to pick David up because her train doesn't get there until the morning. It's like the Polar Express or some shit. I don't know. It only runs in the middle of the night. So Anya sucks it up and helps David get back to his hotel. And you know production put her up to this because there's no other reason why Anya would be doing this. She keeps saying how everything is so strange and why are you doing this? Why are you here? Where are you going? You're staying here. Then we see David get into the elevator like every nightmare I've had where, I think I've told you about my nightmare with the redheaded kid, or like a clown where he gets into the elevator and just waves goodbye with a creepy smile. Like it's the first time he's ever gotten into a fucking elevator. Jesus. It wasn't charming. It wasn't cute. It was just creepy. Like if Asuelu did it, it would have been cute because he'd be like, oh, what are these shiny buttons? Kind of like an elf, but it's David. Don't tell me he's going to own an RV and maybe murder some people and he doesn't know how an elevator works. But now that's not all because the worst was yet to come. He goes into his room and puts his suitcase right on the bed. The bed is lava. Everything is lava, especially nowadays. Thank you, actually, to so many of you who've reached out to me and were like, Jody, every time I see the news, every time I look at something, I think of you because you've been telling us for years, everything is lava. It's not like those suitcases of his haven't been schlepped across thousands of miles that has never, ever been cleaned or sanitized since the airplane was built, the airport was built, until this last week, of course. And now David's just picking it up, spreading it all over that bedspread, which he is then going to sit on. Then he's going to get in the sheets with it. It's a whole cross-contamination thing. I'm taking everything back now. I said he was Michael Scott, and now I don't think even Michael Scott would do that. He would definitely take out some wipes. He'd be more like an Ed. All right, well, speaking of Ed, oh God, it might be cool in that nail salon, but things are heating up between these two and not in a good way. This was physically uncomfortable to watch. So Ed confronts Rose about her 4,000 Facebook friends, and I understand his hesitation. I get it. I maybe have 100 something. I don't even know, okay? But when someone has 4,000 friends and they don't even have running electricity where they live, you have to wonder who she's talking to, right? So I get it. Now, was this the best time to ask Rose? Of course not. I mean, the best time to ask Rose that question would have been when you found out she had 4,000 Facebook friends months ago when you met her on Facebook. He also should not have asked her in the middle of getting a mani-pedi. And yes, I understand it's a show, but I do think there's some sort of, I don't know if culture shock is the right way to put it, a huge change. You know, Ed's probably used to being in front of or behind a camera. To him, it's not a big thing, right? He lives in California. He's in the industry. But Rose isn't. So here she is coming from a very humble life, and now she's thrown in front of cameras having to answer personal questions. But then I go back to being thankful that Ed has as many brain cells in his head as Rose has zits ready to pop on her face. I'm sorry, I just have to state the obvious. I'm glad that he's skeptical. I think he should go with that, or should have gone with that before, and dove into the Google before he got there. What I hated and where I turned on Ed was when he demanded that Rose take an STD test, but he's not willing to take one himself. That is so shitty and so hypocritical. You know, maybe Rose would open up about her past, or at least I'd like to think so anyway, if those cameras weren't there, like I mentioned. But Ed can't say to her face, you take a test, but the standards for me are totally different. Here in the Philippines, it's not good enough for Big Ed. That really is ambushing Rose in the middle of a nice restaurant with a camera crew, possibly with people she knows in her real life all around her. All that to say, Rose got some evil eyes. Holy shit. Even when my mom was most pissed off at me, I can name the day I was in a venture and I was really bitching and whining that I wanted a New Kids on the Block comforter and she wasn't going to have it. And I wouldn't let up and she smacked me across the face in the back aisle of a venture. I deserved it. But even then, I did not see the darkness in the eyes that Rose had. Ed did the right thing, getting her a different hotel room, because I wouldn't want to sleep in the same hotel building with Rose after the way that she was staring at him. But now we need to go back to another question, what they didn't talk about before he even went there. I was shocked that they had not talked about Prince's dad. Ed was talking about adopting him, and he's been calling him daddy. If she was going to move to the United States and get engaged after this trip or on this trip, don't you think the topic of Prince and his biological dad and custody would have come up at some point? How are they going to get him out of the country? Are you in contact with his dad? Can he sign the papers? What paperwork do you need? Never did that come up. You can look up homeopathic recipes for shiny hair using mayonnaise, but you can't look up how to adopt a child if I don't know where the dad is in another country. God, Ed, come on. All right, let's talk about our baby girl, Lisa. Usman has got a real surprise for her. Now, the real surprise obviously is not going to be until she sees the translation between Usman and the artistic director, the Mikey to Erica Jane, if you will. The dude is trash talking Lisa right to her face, and I thought it was amazing because Lisa is so trashy. I'd feel bad for her if she were not so fucking rude and stupid. You're going to make these two guys who obviously live in an impoverished country, or they're not as spoiled as we are. That's probably more politically correct. You're going to make them redo a video because you are not in it as a floating ghost. This isn't like a PowerPoint presentation slide, Lisa. They can't just delete one little frame and the rest of the song makes sense. She's an absolute fool and she's so freaking rude, which is why I don't feel bad for her. Plus, add in the fact that she's, what? Hold on. 52 years old. She's acting like she's 17. She's screaming about disrespect and how she knows the entertainment industry inside and out. She knows how stars are made in the States. It's beyond embarrassing to watch. I wouldn't even give her the respect of an elder. Oh yeah, I said it. Cause she is. She's crazy. She's a different flavor of crazy than Angela. Just as embarrassing to watch, but it's a different kind. Angela is angry out of love, and Lisa is angry out of, I don't know, angry out of anger? Okay, that makes no sense. Anyway, I say this every season with women like Nicole, Angela, Lisa. This is why people around the world hate Americans. They see a real lunatic out in the wild screaming at men to cash me outside, how about that? And now we're all assholes. To my listeners abroad, outside the United States, please know these women do not represent us. We are even more disgusted by them than you are. If it makes you feel any better, we just want you to know. Do you remember that little game I teased you with a few weeks ago, Two Truths and a Lie? Well, stay tuned for my special talent because it's pretty amazing. Not quite as amazing as my morning ritual, though. Ritual is the obsessively researched vitamin just for women. Along with my morning coffee, every day I take two easy-to-swallow capsules. They make me feel like I'm waking up the right way, like I'm doing something for me. And I'm supporting a female-founded company, which I always love. You know that about me. I completely trust Ritual because I can look at the bottle, I can look at their website and see exactly where the elements of the essential vitamin are sourced. Now more than ever, that is important to me and I know a lot of you. For example, I know that the B12 is coming from Bridgeport, Connecticut, the iron and magnesium from Ogden, Utah, and I'm not a vitamin junkie. I just want a quality vitamin that packs a punch of what I need to fill in the gaps. I was actually just talking to my mom this morning, telling her that she's really got to start taking her omega-3s, but just like her most favorite daughter, they tend to upset her stomach. But Ritual is the only vitamin with omega-3s that I've ever taken that doesn't leave me feeling queasy. There's no fish oils here. Ritual is vegan, gluten, and allergen-free, so I never have to worry about when I'm taking it and if I'm going to get that nasty aftertaste and that sour stomach. And here is the best part. I don't have to worry about running to the store or if I can even go these days because Ritual is delivered right to my door. I can cancel, I can snooze at any time, and it is very reasonable. Better health doesn't just happen overnight, and right now, Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, just a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/realityv to start your ritual today. That's 10% off your first 3 months at ritual.com/realityv. And P.S., my secret talent, I can sing with my mouth closed. Check it out, ritual.com/realityv. Let's talk about Mark. That is the name of the latest 60 Days In episode, but I'm going to be combining this latest episode with last week's episode, Special Ops. New to this season is a two-parter. We kind of have part one, part two. In this part, we have four new participants plus Tony. They're going in for 30 days. Since the last participants left, they made some improvements to the jail, so they're going to see how well they've done. Last week, we saw Tony go back in as if he were rearrested. So he's given high fives to all the guys. And before he went in, he gave a little training to all the newbies. You can tell Mark was not liking that. He does not like being talked down to. And, you know, I mean, Tony was kind of arrogant, right? But if you played the game like Tony plays the game and you made it through with enough shanks hidden under your balls to probably arm the entire pod, you got my respect. So let's talk about our inmates. Tony has been in for 2 days and already he's got a shank. That's our boy. He also has a do boy. His name is Chad. A do boy is exactly what my ass would be because I need protection. I'm a huge wimp and I don't know if do boys, if you know what I mean, but I'm thinking maybe they do if their boss wants them to. I mean, that part I'm not doing. That's part of the job description. Jody is checking out. But I mean, the dishes and the running errands, I am really good at that. So Tony's do boy, Chad, is doing everything except making his bed and washing his undies, which I think is kind of an interesting line to draw. You can do everything else except wash my underwear. I mean, I would do that because I don't want anyone washing my underwear, but wouldn't guys prefer someone else to be scrubbing their skid marks out? Anyhow, Tony decides that he's going to up the game a little bit. He sees a crossword puzzle that's behind the CO's desk. He tells Chad, go get me the book and bring it up to our room so we can have something to do. So, of course, Chad scurries behind there, grabs it, goes right back up to their cell. But before Tony can follow him up there, two COs barge in there, go right up to the cell. They bust Chad. He gets taken out of there. But it's no sweat off Tony's back. He could not care less. He lacks the guilt that every Catholic, former Catholic, I'm going to throw most women in there, we're hardwired with that stuff, but Tony definitely skipped that line when God was making him. Now let's talk a little bit about Heather. We're going to go to the women's pod for a little bit and then jump back to the men's pod. Heather is a jail commander, whatever the hell that is. She knows stuff about jail, that's it. So she's appalled at what's going on in Etowah County. She can't believe it. There's women making out. She sees them passing drugs, doing drugs, other contraband, you name it. She has got her eyes all over it. I think what I like most about her is that she's worried about the inmates and she's worried about the safety of the staff because that is her day job, which I really like. Now, Vanessa is our other female participant. She's a firefighter, EMT, and she's a former CO officer. Vanessa gets to intake. She gets the strip search. That was thorough. She's thinking, all right, things are going to go well here. But she gets thrown into the holding cell with women who were not searched and they didn't end up getting searched. And they're all the women who are bragging about having drugs on them. So Vanessa knows it's going to be a jungle in there. Later, the ladies end up sitting at the same table with each other. And this is right as they're having a shift change. This new guard walks in and you can tell she's a mess. Her face is blurred out, but you can just tell from her body language that she is nervous as hell and in no way capable of controlling that pod. I knew it was going to be bad when that CO that was sitting there originally asked her more than once, you sure you're ready? You're okay? Well, she wasn't okay because this guard allows Booney, who's an inmate who's supposed to be in her cell at all times. Well, she lets her out of her cell on accident. And when she realizes it, thanks to the entire pod of women screaming at her, you let her out, she's not supposed to be out. This guard sprays Booney in the face with mace. Well, that's when shit goes sideways, or went tilt, as Heather would say. And the women end up throwing trays from the second floor. Booney ends up pushing the CO, and it's total chaos. And that's where we get left with the women. Now, let's go back to the men's pod with Donovan. He's the guy who looks kind of like a biker. He's got the long beard, the long hair. He got busted when he went into intake because he had a handcuff key hidden in his shoe. Who knew that handcuff keys were just like a little rod? Well, the crew is freaking out when they get this call. They were actually with Vanessa at the time, and they're like, oh shit, we got to bring this stuff to Peaky Blinders. And that's where, well, maybe we should call him Sneaky Peak. Sneaky Peak tells them that they gave Donovan the key to sneak in because they wanted to see if they would catch it. Such a jokester. Now, eventually, Donovan gets into the pod, and he just gets his game face on. He is ready to work. And he sees Tony. He recognizes Tony, of course. And Tony is strutting his stuff around with this little do-boy, Chad. Basically, this guy is on a leash. It was rough to watch. And this is where Donovan has an emotional, moral issue with it. He knows it's a good power move because that's what guys do when they are working their way up to pod boss or that level. But he doesn't feel like he could do it, which makes me kind of love him. He's like a biker dude with a heart of gold. Kind of like those Hell's Angels. There's Hell's Angels who escort kids into school who are bullied. How amazing is that? I love that. Well, the admiration is mutual because Tony really likes the way that Donovan is working his game. Actually, in his words, he said, I wrote this down, for an older white dude, I like the way he moves. I think Tony would like the way that I move at a Wendy's drive-thru, at any drive-thru, as a matter of fact. Actually, you know what? Oh my gosh, I forgot your name. I need to go back and look. One of you on Instagram sent me a video from Taco Bell. Like, yeah, the Taco Bell. And they're using my new theme song as their little commercial jingle. Can you believe it? I mean, if that's not fate, I don't know if I could eat the triple layer gordita that they're promoing, but maybe I could get myself like a free Nacho Bel Grande, although they don't make it like they used to because I really like the green onions, but remember a couple years back, people got the shits from them because someone pooped on it. Whatever. All right, let's go on to Mark, a retired warrant sergeant, whatever the hell that is. And he's confident. He's not cocky. He thinks that he can do the job, complete the mission. He'll adapt to jail no problem. Sweet Peaks and Horton here's a who, are skeptical, however. Right to Mark's face, which I thought was such a dick move. I would have loved this if they did it to Dennis, but no, they do it to Mark. Right to his face, they're kind of mocking him, which has got to be a great feeling as you're entering the almost literal gates of hell. Thanks for the vote of confidence, guys. Now, once inside the pod, Mark starts to freak out a little bit, as I think they all do, even on the inside, because he's getting asked already. He hasn't even passed the CO's desk, and he's already getting asked if he's got drugs up his butt. But once he declares that his poop chute is clean, like Whistlin' Dixie, everyone leaves him the hell alone. He actually gets his own cell, which I don't think we've ever seen on here. But he does get a roommate the next morning, which is where the ball starts rolling. This guy, Tony, not to be mistaken with our pro Tony, his roommate Tony is what they call in the biz a frequent flyer. So Mark is stoked because he knows that Tony's going to be wanting to do drugs and he's going to find out who's got them, how they're getting them in, and where they're hiding it. Within hours, Tony gets his hands on some clone, but Mark's in way too much pain to care very much. We find out he was injured on his job years ago, so now he's saying that his injuries are flaring up, and I totally believe him. I don't think he's lying about being in pain. I'm sure sleeping on a metal bunk bed is going to hurt like hell, but what did he expect? This is the kind of thing that reminds me of Shanice from a couple weeks ago. If you know that your health is going to be a huge issue, why would you volunteer and take someone else's spot who wanted to do the show? So sure enough, we see Mark sitting on the top bunk and he gives the signal that he needs to tap out. All right, there really is no great way to transition this. Maybe Cody is in his personal jail with Robin because we need to break down this latest episode of Sister Wives. It's kind of one of those episodes where everything happened, but nothing happened. The title of the episode alone, Robin versus Cody. I mean, this is what we have all been daydreaming of since the conception of my Sister Wives closet. So here we go. The moment has arrived. Robin is still waiting around for this rental, right? So she's going to call up her realtor. You might know him as Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And he's going to then make some calls to make available to rent a 6-bedroom, 4-bath, open floor plan, large family room, mother-in-law suite for Dayton, and of course, we need to have an office space for the world headquarters for my Sister Wives closet, and we're going to need to wrap that all up in 28 days or less. Cody's recently perfected curls just started to kink, and that's when I freaking lost it. He's never looked better, and now Robin, of all people, is going to take him down. And I don't hate Robin. I've kind of been a Robin stan, but I was hating watching Robin walking around these houses, rolling her eyes, gorgeous, huge homes that your husband is bringing you into with impeccable finish work. Did you see the board and batten? And she has the gall to be pouting as if she's a victim in this. You know, just because God isn't delivering on your terms when you want it, Robin, doesn't mean that you get permission to go pout and sulk around like you're one of your toddlers. You know how she's talking about Cody stressing her kids out? One could argue that she is actually the one causing her kids anxiety because she's waiting until the last minute, which causes everyone in the family to be in limbo. And of course, it's causing friction between her and Cody. And that absolutely trickles down to the kids. And she even confirms that later. Now then we get Christine visiting Aspen. Nothing really to note here, except Christine has a world-famous hummus recipe, which you know I looked up on Twitter. It's got really the usual stuff. Garbanzo beans, limes, onion powder, garlic, olive oil. You can go look it up. Most surprising is that she uses a half cup of tahini in there. Now that is not surprising to be in a hummus recipe, but I think it's kind of shocking that Christine even knows what tahini is. And that's what makes me love Christine. I mean, she keeps me on my toes. She's constantly surprising me. Meets a pretty spicy relationship, just like her hummus. Oh, all right, pretty bad, but here we go. It's going to get a lot worse. Remember when I said that Cody and Robin's tension trickles down? Well, Robin finally agrees to this, and she's rolling her eyes as they're in the 7-bedroom house because Cody says the kids might have to go to a different school. I don't know if I'm the asshole here, but I don't think Cody said anything wrong. I mean, if this house is out of your current school's boundary, what's he going to do about it? He can't change the boundary. He can ask for an exception, but he can't guarantee that. So Robin, it's not about him causing tension in front of the kids or causing anxiety. He's just saying something that you disagree with and you screaming in front of the kids, Cody, why would you say that? Why would you say that? Just makes it worse. Now, speaking of anxiety, mine was at an all-time high as we were watching Robin and Cody packing up their dining room. Robin has the audacity to say Cody is the one who's so stubborn that he's not even considering renting. Let's just break this down for Robin, shall we? Robin is the one that is not considering buying. Cody's not against renting, but he's against it now because it doesn't make sense. It takes a lot of balls to call up a seller and ask them, don't sell your house to me. I just want to rent it for 2 years. I would say no if I were selling a house. That's 2 years of wear and tear on your walls and your floors. That's 20 plus people in the Brown family and a ton of kids running around that place. Plus, if something breaks, which you know it's going to, or it leaks or gets damaged, the owner is going to have to fix it. They're a landlord now. So why Robin thinks it's okay to ask this guy this, and if she wants to do it so badly, why doesn't Robin pick up the phone and call the man and ask? She's the one who wants it so badly, so be proactive, do something about it. Channel God and you two call Curtis together. But no, Cody calls up Curtis, who's the homeowner, and says, you know what? You're never going to believe this. My wife has been talking personally to God, and turns out he wants us to rent from you. So could you not sell to us, just rent for 2 years? And you're going to really love this one. We're going to need you to lower that earnest money deposit, you know, so if the Browns have to buy from them and walk away, it's totally okay to dick over these sellers who are just going to be shit out of luck because they've been twiddling their thumbs waiting around for them for months. I mean, Robin realizes that these sellers are going to be out of money no matter what, but I guess it doesn't matter because Robin gets what Robin wants because God told her she should get her way. The line of the night that we were all waiting for was when Cody lost his shit and says, we could have stayed in Vegas and saved a fortune. Now, Cody all along has been saying that he was the one who wanted to move to Flagstaff, that it was his idea. But no, just as all of us suspected, and now we know it's confirmed, this was always Robin's idea. Dayton was going to Northern Arizona University because he got a scholarship. It's in Flagstaff. Robin wants him to stay living at home with them, which is fine, whatever. However, that means that you are now displacing three other wives and their families. So in order for Robin, you know, legal wife to get her way, they're all uprooted and they moved down to Flagstaff. And that was what Cody was low-key trying to tell us there. And we heard you, man. And we see you, Robin. We all got your number now. And one of us, who is much braver than I am, is going to call you up and tell you to fix that freaking curl on the right side of her head. Why does she take the entire right side of her hair into one big curl and curl it backwards? It's driving me crazy. She's either got to run her hand through it or learn how to curl your hair back better. Feel a lot better getting that off my chest. Well, thank you guys for joining me this week on Reality TV. Check the show notes for links to Patreon, to the Request Podcast, my sponsor Ritual this week. And as always, take care of yourself, take care of the people you love. Come back next week and stay salty.